I'm Eric Heiden.
I'm Nick Mason.
And this is Neon Static. Welcome to episode 12 of Neon Static. Here's what we have in store for you. Nicholas, tell us.
Yes, we have news about the band lists and worlds and streaming. We are going to be channeling some rules information about Conduit. And then for our main topic, channeling.
Conduit.
And then for our main topic, a amazing discussion on the topic of mortality in runners specifically.
That's a discussion on flatlining.
Yes.
Get that too.
In case that was a little too dark.
But before we get into the episode, we want to thank our patrons whose support is helping us build a better show and YouTube channel and all that good stuff. If you want to support the podcast and YouTube channel, check out patreon.com/neonstatic.
All right. So let's jump right into the 24/7 news cycle. This just in, local doctor taken out and no.
taken out back.
Yep. There was a band list update.
And nobody feels bad.
But Derek does. One of our locals who's just a huge fan of this card. And apparently, as a result of liking this card, not a fan of us. What are we talking about? Of course, it's Dr. Vientian Keeling, which got banned along with DreamNet. So one runner, one corp. That's fair.
It's fair. That's how all ban lists have to happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
Perfect symmetry.
Perfectly balanced as all things should be. So Keeling was on the ban list because of Ag Infusion, right? Like,
yeah, the recent QTM discussion of their deck, which featured Keeling, Ag. It's not the first appearance that we've seen of this. It was like Guantanamo Bay deck list from... out of a different testing group. Snare Bears, I think. This is an Ag Infusion deck, which features three Keelings, and Keeling is a card that reduces your hand size until you have to discard down to negative hand size and you die. It also is relatively painless, I think, for the corp to res. Is it three to res? And then four to trash?
I believe that's the case, yes.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. It's banned now. We're never going to see it again. But
it's banned. Yes. And it was just really difficult to play against because there's very little good tech that exists. There's like pinhole threading, but even that, the ag deck
infusion
makes that a lot less useful. There was an interesting mention in the article about en passant being like tech for it, which I never had considered and I thought was interesting.
Oh, so that's the one where when you pass unrezzed ice, you can trash it.
Exactly. So you can kind of slowly turn the ag ability off by just, if they let you pass ice because they don't want to boop you anymore and they want to save for a future boop, you go, okay, well, that ice is gone now.
But there's only three of those.
Three en passants.
Yeah.
If you're running three en passants.
That's true. You are protect pretty hard for this one specific matchup.
I suspect that you are sad almost all the time otherwise if you're doing that.
Right, so, which is why, despite technically working, it's not actually good.
I've never heard of anyone running en passant in a try-hard deck, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So Keeling gets banned for being a card that allows you to sit there and do nothing and win the game.
Yeah. As opposed to Super Deep Borehole, right? Which is the other card that has like the alternate win condition, which actively helps the runner while winning you the game, right? That's the cool counter play. This was tilted. The scales were tilted so far in the corp's favor for this card that it makes sense to me.
Right. And Borehole might be too weak on that side.
I think there was a midpoint that they missed.
Specifically because Borehole leaves the bad pub in play after you trash it.
So, it would be interesting if it like reset, if it like when you trashed it, it did something. Anyway, that's not design cards.
Yeah. Anyway, the other card to get banned was DreamNet. So this was a staple card in Hoshko decks, and they're trying to rein in Hoshko. Basically, it says that when you make a successful run, you gain a credit and draw a card if your identity is digital, which the backside of Hoshko is. So you could get even more card draw in a deck that already drew a lot of cards. Figured they'd rein that in.
It was basically only good in Hoshko, right? There used to be Apex, and I want to say there was another.
I don't know enough of the deep lore of the old ways. So it was a link of at least two, or your ID is digital. So link two would be Sunny.
Oh, Nova.
Ah. So that was just for the credit gain part of it. But, you know, the draw card was okay on its own. But with credit gain on top of it, it completely negated Hoshko's downside of you draw a card and then gain a credit. So this is you draw two cards instead if you keep the ID active, which is a lot. So
yeah, and Catch Upon Infaction, this was a huge enabler for these like big Hoshko decks, 70 card Hoshko decks. You would never dream of doing this, I don't think, without Gachapon and DreamNet. You wouldn't dream of it. I'm sorry. You know, where you just put the Gachapon down, you can install a virtual resource, which this was, right?
Yep.
So you would go find this, and then this would enable you to dig through more stuff to kind of find more Gachapons, and
Yeah. It was self-reinforcing card draw that negated your downside that was just really good all around.
And the last card that got unbanned, was Lamb. Mm-hmm. That's two A's, in case you've never heard of this card and you want to go look it up on NRDB. This one we'll read for folks who are newer to the game. It's a 4-cost 2MU icebreaker. It's a fractor, so it breaks barriers. And it says, when you encounter a piece of ice, you may pay 2 credits to have it gain barrier until the end of the encounter. This is similar to N'Golo.
Yep.
Use this ability only once per turn. And then for 2 credits, you can break any number of barrier subroutines. And for 3 credits, plus 6 strength, which is pretty good, but 3 credits. And it has a base strength of 2. And Lamb got banned initially because of a couple of combo cards that interacted with it in ways that were just very, very strong. Knifed and Surfer were cards. Knifed was a card that would let you discard ice after you fully broke it. And then Surfer let you swap pieces of ice, kind of like Inversificator, but you could do it over and over and over again. So you could pay 2 credits to make anything a barrier with Lamb and then surf in the entire way through the server, which had the effect of making people's ice not matter, which stinks.
You know, it's funny. I didn't know why Inversificator was called surfing when you rode that one all the way in.
Yes, it's from that.
Now it makes sense.
Yeah. So those cards are both gone now. So Lamb is fair enough. And particularly, I'm interested to try it in some Freedom decks because it's used there in the past. Freedom Kamalo has a very strong fractor breaker called Yusuf, which is entirely run on virus counters. And now with Lamb, you can make anything into a barrier, and then you could use your Yusuf on it, which kind of negates the problem with Lamb in general is that it costs a lot to bump strength. It's great on a very strong, like an 8-strength barrier, but on the small stuff, it's very, very expensive. Anything that is 3 strength is a nightmare for you because you would have to pay 5 credits to break the subroutines.
The only one where it is amazing is Endless Eula.
Sure. Yeah. Break any number, right? But it costs 2 to break anything, which is like, it's a very high ceiling. So the small stuff, all of a sudden you have the step function where you're paying a ton of money.
Yeah. It adds up pretty quick.
Anyway, I don't think we're going to see a ton of Lamb. I think we might see some cool decks with it. I'm happy to see DreamNet take Hoshko down a peg, and we'll see how prevalent. I feel like Hoshko is still going to be pretty ubiquitous, but hopefully not quite as bad as it was.
Clickless card draw plus the Anarch Econ engine without having to pay influence.
That's the thing. So we'll see if it's enough. It'll be interesting. Worlds should be a pretty good event, though. I think that the meta is very diverse, which is cool.
Hey, speaking of Worlds, they previewed Worlds prize support. And it is jaw-dropping and amazing.
Yeah, I'm sad I'm not going.
I know.
So sad. I know. It's incredible. the winner will get a Behold playmat, which made me shed a single tear.
Yep.
A golden tear that I wouldn't get
golden to have. Golden NBN tears.
Yeah. Behold is awesome art. That is going to be an incredible playmat, and I'm sad that I will not get to own a Behold playmat.
Yep.
Saucy is also the art for the Startup Champion.
Yeah. That playmat is amazing.
Yep.
Just the art is so, so good. So, and that's like the beginning of it. There's backpacks. There's deck boxes made out of faux leather. There are mats with the World Tree art, which is also amazing. Alt arts for Padma, Sable, and Asa. Alt art Mavirus, NGO Front, Chesva. Like, there's...
Yeah.
There's so much.
And that's not even touching. There's like side event stuff that has even more. And those
yep.
alt arts for the three runners you mentioned are like these cool like avatar forms of them where they're like, they're not people. They're like shapes. It's their ideas or something. It's kind of neat. It's yeah. in fact, more than kind of neat. It's mostly neat. Entirely neat.
How generous.
Yeah, I'm trying
it's,
to.
It's really neat.
It's really neat.
It's quite cool. It's yeah. quite cool.
Very, very cool art. And I'm jealous. And I really want to go to Worlds next year. I'm going to plan to, I'm going to campaign to go to Worlds. I'm going to maybe not do other events and save up my fun away time credit pool with my family and my wife in yep. order to attend this next year. So anyone who's organizing and really wants to see me in particular make it in the United States, then it'll be easier for me.
And if we're going to Worlds next year, then we're going to need to practice more, which is helped by the fact that we are planning to do a bunch more streaming.
Yeah, we've already picked up a bit. Nick and I did some streaming from the studio at my house 2 weeks ago.
Two weeks, I think, yeah.
I had a blast doing that.
It was good.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. And I have, as a result of playing and hearing some folks, I forget who, someone suggested like, you know, maybe use poker chips for mm-hmm. visibility. I went down the deepest rabbit hole.
Yeah, you did.
And made, not only did I make poker chips, but I also like redesigned the art for it. And I definitely yep. took a lot of inspiration from, I basically went around and said, okay, what's my favorite token symbol for like this thing and this thing? And most of them are things that I've seen in other places. But I did custom bad publicity that I just made myself, and I'm excited about the results. I finished them last night. Ooh.
Are you about to hold up the
I'm
poker
showing
chips
you, Nick.
For
look,
an
here
audio
they are.
Medium?
Here, look. Look.
They look amazing.
Yeah, they're so cool.
Yeah. No, they look good. I liked them when you showed me in the photo that you did earlier.
But now you
when
can
we
see.
We weren't on an audio medium.
Listen, everyone. Listen, everyone. Oh, that doesn't sound good. Here, let me
that's
have to try
just
this.
The plastic. No, this you is... got to pick them up and do that. Yeah. There it is. There it
yes.
is.
ASMR Netrunner.
Okay, everyone, listen to this.
Sorry, did it get weird?
That's how you get the patrons.
Yeah, so I'm super excited for those. Nick is moving closer to where I live as happy coincidence.
In 2 weeks,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be super excited. That will be super excited. And we
yes.
are going
that
to...
That will be, and we will observe that at a distance, being excited, and we'll go, that is exciting.
We're going to try and make Netrunner streaming a more frequent and regular thing. I think we're targeting Monday nights. So the Netrunner streaming situation is kind of compressed right now. Honestly, there's lots of activity. Ysengrin usually does stuff on Wednesdays. Andre normally used to do things on Thursday nights, but recently started doing Tuesday afternoons. In addition to that, Madman, by the way,
mm-hmm.
dude is a powerhouse. And so that kind of begs the question, like, do we try and do Tuesday nights? But then everyone's sort of just come off of Andre's stream, so maybe they're tie-tie. I refuse to say tired now, by the way, because I'm a dad, so I just say tired.
Gotcha.
Everybody gets
every time you say it, I have to stop and think of what does that mean?
It means tired. I'm tie-dye.
But at first I hear tie-dye.
No, that's not what I said.
Like everybody coming off that stream is tie-dye. There's just crazy colors going around everywhere.
Yeah.
Everybody looks like a hippie.
And I'm sure that there's probably somebody who does Monday nights already, and I just am not aware of it. But I think that's going to work out for us. Let's move on now to some spec work. Well, this is where we talk about rules.
And today's rules are about conduit, specifically. Conduit, rather uniquely, I think, for a lot of cards like this, is a virus, which I always forget. I always think of it as power counters, not virus counters. But what that means is that the corp can get tricky with Mavirus and other ways to purge mid-run, although I think Mavirus is the only one in standard right now. But if you've got a Resma virus, you can trigger its ability mid-run to get rid of all those virus counters. But does that actually do anything if the conduit run has already begun?
And it does. It does.
It does.
So if the runner uses conduit's action ability to run R&D, but conduit is trashed before R&D is breached, how many additional cards does the runner access? And the answer is conduit's action ability checks the number of hosted counters at the time it's nested when you breach ability resolves. If conduit is trashed before this, there are no longer any hosted counters, so the runner will not access any additional cards. And the same deal is true with Mavirus.
Yep. Yeah, because it's either way, it's looking at the number of virus counters that are hosted on it when you breach R&D.
Right. And just for full clarity, we'll read conduit. It says, whenever a successful run in R&D ends, you may place one virus counter on this program. That's not the relevant section here. That's just how you get them. And then click run R&D, period. And then if successful, access X additional cards when you breach R&D. And that is the deal. X is equal to the number of hosted virus counters. So when you breach, you check X. And this came up in one of our recent games. We had to ask some folks in the know and then also realize that we didn't need to ask because it's actually on the rulings for conduit itself. So,
yeah. And the other way that this can come up is that the runner can access things from the top of R&D that would purge virus counters. But those don't have any effect because the
check has already happened.
Access has already, exactly. Yeah, it's already looked, determined how many X is, and started accessing them.
Right. It'll reset you for next time. You'll purge. And then after the run ends, you'll get one virus counter back on it because of conduit.
Yep. So.
So that's it. That's a quick spec work for you. We are going to skip directly because we expect this episode's Into the Depths to be a bit thick. Two C's? Three. Maybe three C's. We'll see.
Yes. So today we are talking about flatlining, which was my least favorite part of the game when we started playing and has become one of my favorites. Not quite as high up as the click.
The almighty.
As it is, the almighty click. It is something that I have really come to enjoy. So flatlining, when you're new, it's super frustrating, I feel like, because the cards that flatline you feel like they come out of nowhere and you can't really predict them, particularly like in startup. The one that we saw a lot early was Public Trail, End of the Line. So because that can happen in the same turn, if you just had three cards in hand, you can die.
Yeah, it just comes out of nowhere, it seems like. I've seen it be the thing, literally the thing that's like, somebody came up, I spent an hour and a half teaching this person a game and playing a game with them, and then happened to flatline them because I thought, you know, this person was on board with this kind of stuff. And nope, just said, oh, well, there's no way to play against that, and then walked away. And yeah. I get it. How did you learn to go from one end of the spectrum where you didn't really love it to the other?
Oh, yes. Flatlining, or how I stopped worrying and learned to love the fork. This is basically, I think that flatlining being in the game makes you a better player on the runner side. The runner side can very often feel very random. You know, you're looking at R&D and maybe you hit the agenda, maybe you don't. You know, maybe you get the agenda in that asset spam face down that just put out 4 assets or whatever. But flatlining is something that you can actually control, and the habits it teaches you make you generally better at the game, at responding to all types of threats, not just flatline threats. So it is something that makes those consequences really visible, where it is obvious you lost the game because you floated tags or something that allowed the corp to flatline you, as opposed to, well, I lost the game. You know, a lot of times you'll lose the game because your econ's bad or you didn't find your breakers or whatever. But like, it's not as obvious and immediate as I got killed because of this card and they could play that card because I did this.
And I feel like it's a game mechanic that allows the runner to push their luck and they can go for risky plays.
Yep.
And sometimes they can pay off, or sometimes they can get punished if the corp has the flat line in hand. And it's a really nice tension that exists in the game that has made itself more apparent of how nuanced and special it is over time. It's very special. Killing a person is very special.
Oh, it's just, yeah, you never forget your first. But even in the higher level meta, like, flatlining is still a really great part of the game because it allows the corp to present forks, specifically really hard choices for the runner to make. Either you let me score this agenda, or I'm going to hit you with an end of the line or oppo research or whatever. You know, either you spend this turn clearing tags or I'm going to kill you. Either you check all these face down assets that I just put out, or there might be enough in there for me to kill you with Reaper functions and clearing houses and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, and we should put a slightly belated PSA here that we won't be reading all of the cards that we are talking about here for the sake of time. We found that when we go into one of these sections and we talk a lot about cards, if we spend time reading through all of them, that we tend to be here for 2 hours. So we're gonna try it out just talking about cards.
So there's a couple different ways that the corp can present these types of threats to the runner, and you can learn to work around all of them. And that is most of what we're going to talk about today, is how you work around the individual types of threat. One of them, and probably the most common, is tag punishment. So boom, the just rotated deal 7 meat damage if the opponent has 2 tags was probably the biggest of these. But the current ones are end of the line, which removes a tag to deal 4 meat damage, and mindscaping, which deals X net damage, where X is equal to the number of tags they have. So it's a punish for floating a lot of tags.
Right. And one of those is significantly stronger than the other.
Yes, you know,
as far as like a lethal threat. Right. Mindscaping. Yeah. Can be if you have the ability to just put tons of tags in. I feel like that card is more likely to be imported into NBM than the other way around. Like, as a lethality threat in Jinteki, it fits nicely into their ping, 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 ping package,
right,
where if they can get a single tag on you because of a snare or something, they can capitalize on it and maybe kill you that way. But as far as mindscaping being the thing to worry about, maybe there's a deck that comes into NBM.
And related to that are cards that hit you with a lot of tags all at once. Specifically here, I'm thinking of Oppo Research. So it can give you up to 4 tags, although it's expensive for the corp. 4 tags, of course, being the number of clicks that you have. So it can take your entire turn to clear this if you don't have another way to deal with it, not to mention 8 money.
Right, setting you back 8 credits too. And that's kind of why I feel like you mentioned it costs the corp a lot of money. Jinteki usually ends up being pretty poor. Historically, I don't think there's a lot of like super rich Jinteki decks. So importing Oppo Research into Jinteki and having Mindscaping in faction isn't as viable in my mind as the opposite, because there are asset spam Jinteki decks, but actually firing the Oppo Research for 7 credits, right? It's 2 and then 5?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, to add 4.
It's a pretty big ask for Jinteki, and maybe it's enough to kill, but I haven't seen that be super prevalent. I don't know why I'm on this tangent, but
it's So that's like the big setup, right? They will oppo research as their last action, and then you either clear them or they kill you at the end of the line. So how do you deal with this as the runner on the counterplay side? The biggest of them is pretty obvious. You never want to float tags if you can help it. The tags allow them to punish you in a ton of different ways, but they can also kill you with end of the line.
More ways than ever lately. Like this last set, there's so many ways that tags are bad for you. There's B1001, you know, is a niche thing that Andre and Jeff on their tier list, they put it in binder fodder, and now it's making its way into like some good tournament winning decks, I think. So there's lots of ways for tags to be dangerous. So
yes. Starlit Knight gets more subs the more tags you have, and also gives you tags. Obviously, Retribution can really mess you up when they trash your
whatever they want,
your rig, or yeah, exactly.
It's a really interesting time for tags because there's not really a super strong tag me deck right now that exists. To get a flat line via tags, it's harder than ever now because it used to be all you needed to have was a couple booms or one boom, right? And now it takes a bit more, so it's a bit less binary. So if you're playing against a deck, you might be tempted to go a little bit tag me because you're like, well, it's harder for them to kill me as long as I stay above four cards. But some really emergent play comes out of this where people are coming up with creative and cool ways to kill. I like the tag game that exists in this meta right now. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's very interesting because there's just a lot of different punishes, but most of the punishment for tags removes a tag as a cost. So there's a lot of, like, the tags aren't as sticky once you start to ignore them, but they will still hurt you on the way out. So yeah, don't float tags. If the corp doesn't have tags to exploit on their turn, they can't do anything about it. So
yeah.
The other thing is to watch the corp's money. All of these things cost some amount. So Mindscaping is only 2. So they can actually click Mindscaping if you happen to be floating 5+ tags or for some reason.
It maxes out at 3, though.
Does it really?
Mindscaping maxes out at 3 net damage.
Okay. So it would be at least 4 to kill someone from a 5-card hand. You would need 3 tags and 2 copies of Mindscaping. So you couldn't do that all in one turn from nothing.
Yes.
Yeah. So watch their money. That'll tell you when you have to worry about tags and when you don't. If they play an oppo research on you, but they have no money whatsoever and you're not seeing any way on the table to get it, you don't have to worry about an end of the line or a Mindscaping kill or something because they're going to have to make money before they can do anything to kill you.
Right. End of line costs 4, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's always at least 4 to kill you. And if you just keep a healthy hand, you'll be fine. The other thing is try not to run last click. So this is advice you'll very often hear. And this is one of the big reasons is because you can end up floating tags by accident. You can hit a snare and get a tag. You can run into a ping, which gives you a tag when it's rezzed. There's no way to get around it aside from like hush, I guess.
Or like a virtual service agent at this point.
Right.
Right. That'll give you a tag if you can't deal with it properly. There's a number of ways to just go, surprise, you get a tag.
You know? Yep. And then you're floating it into the corp turn and they get to punish you for it. So that's always bad. Yeah.
And a good corp player will keep the ping unless they desperately need to stop you if they can, you know, for an early res or something. But if you already got your fracture up, the value of the ping is so much higher than the 1 credit to break that they'll just hold it until you make a mistake and you got lazy. And you ran last click because you were feeling comfortable. And suddenly you're very uncomfortable.
Exactly.
Because they know where your cats are.
They will find them. They will bring them to the end of the line.
Catricide. Very so, dark episode. Yeah,
you also don't want to go broke because tags cost money to clear. So if the corp is going to do something on their turn that can tag you, then you want to be able to clear them with the money that you have. And I very often would get into situations where I'm running, I spend all my money on breakers to get into the server, get my access, do my cool stuff, but the game doesn't end just because you got into a server. So if you go broke, then you're going to have to find a way to make money and clear tags on that next turn. It gets very difficult.
I think this is why I appreciate the tag mechanic so much. It's that it doesn't, at first blush, it does not seem terribly nuanced. It seems rather blunt, right? Because of what it does. But when you start to see the play patterns that you need to watch out for and the cards you need to be thinking about, and well, if I keep my money up, then I can deal with this threat. And if they do that, you know, you have like a second order and then like a third order metagame around it that it just kind of unravels isn't the right word, but it's like an onion, right? You start peeling back layers and it's really neat.
Or a parfait.
A parfait. Yeah.
Also has layers. Anyway, people are going to like that joke, but you very obviously do not get it.
F*** me then, I guess.
It's a Shrek reference. You don't know that?
I never really.
An ogre is like an onion.
I know that one.
Okay. And then the donkey's all like, onions are gross though. Why not a parfait? We're cutting this. Please tell me you're cutting this.
If you want me to.
No, it's fine.
We'll just have to find out.
That's true.
I didn't cut it.
But yeah, it is one of those things that is very easy to kind of start seeing lines around is how much money you have left over to deal with any tags that might come up. You know, not running last click so that you have a click to deal with whatever happens on the run, including tags. Always big. So then the other thing to note is Oppo Research. It is only on if you trash a card or steal an agenda. So if you can avoid doing those things, the Oppo Research won't be on. Now, stealing is a lot harder to avoid. If you hit the agenda, you're going to steal it unless there's some additional cost that you don't want to pay. But trashing is something that you have control over. So if you're just checking servers to see what is in there, what assets they have, you can just choose not to trash it if you don't have a way to deal with Oppo Research if they were to do it to you next turn.
Right. But like you said, you can't just check servers with impunity because they might have put an Oracle think tank out. And there's another way to just, oops, surprise, you get a tag. Or tomorrow's headline, oops, you get a tag. Like NBN is full of them, right?
Exactly.
So yeah, lots of ways for you to surprise end up with a tag. And Oppo Research, like you said, it's something that's trash or steal. And it's a combination of that and the economic piece you were talking about watching the corpse money, because that thing costs 7. And right. Like R Plus makes it cheaper because the first tag is free for them. And so it really only costs 5. But for 4 tags,
that's still a really expensive operation.
Yeah, it's quite expensive. It's, you know, 2 hurdles they need to overcome for that. And you can keep both or either of them in mind when you're trying to work around the tags. And as far as tag removal, that's another way that you can work around tags. You can just get rid of them quickly and easily once you've gotten them. Options for that includes no free lunch, networking, no one home, which will stop you from getting them in the first place, so long as you have some money. And then 2 new cards that come to mind for us, Wheels, Hana Wheels.
Palintra.
Thank you. Who allows you to click trash Hana, gain 2 clicks back and remove a tag. And I feel like one of the best options for Anarch and for things for IDs that want to do a lot of trashing is Solidarity Badge. That's a great
one. Now, the big key with Solidarity Badge being that it is at the start of your turn. So it removes a tag that they put on you in their turn, but it doesn't solve the don't float tags problem.
That's right. Yeah. So it deals with like Oppo Research nicely because it'll get the first one cleared. And then you can do, you know, if you have 6 credits, you 3 clicks, you have 1 to spare for something, which is still nice. Or some combination of these 2 things. Maybe you have a Hana and a Solidarity Badge. But Solidarity Badge, I believe, is unique.
Yes.
There are options. They're all different and limited in different ways, which is pretty cool.
So I think that's it for tag punishing. The next major threat that you're going to run into is stuff that comes up in the middle of a run. And there's really two and a half categories of this. You've got ice that can deal damage. So things like Anansi, we've talked about a lot on the show, can deal a whole lot of damage if you're not expecting it. Anemone is very often used in setups for a finisher with other things where you res it and you can guaranteed deal at least two damage. The new Atini, and just in general, centuries. Centuries are very likely to deal damage. So you want to be aware of those and have your killer ready if you're running blind. But the other thing that can get you are the traps. So Snare, Urtica Cipher, really any PE agenda, but particularly Fuji Asset Retrieval, which does 3 damage when stolen, or Sting, which does at least 2, but can go as high as, I want to say, 4 in a PE deck.
4. Yeah. That's the best case for Sting for the PE player, though.
Right. So there's also Angelique Garza Correa, which can deal damage when accessed. Urban Renewal, which is played face up, so it's not really a...
It's not a trap. It's a right. Ticking time bomb, but you know, fair
exactly.
Enough.
With an additional cost to steal more than anything. And then the sort of the half category there is specifically House of Knives, the agenda that you can remove one of its agenda tokens from, and it gets 3, to deal a net damage once per run. So it can really throw off your counts if you're like, all right, I know that's a Fuji Asset Retrieval. I know I need to have at least 4 cards in hand to steal it and be okay. I'm going to go get it. And the opponent pings you with House of Knives on the way in. All of a sudden, that's a problem.
Now, we haven't seen House of Knives since rotation as much because of the loss of Obokata Protocol. But it still exists, and someone will come up with a creative way of making it a pain in your butt.
Oh, yeah. It's going to come up at some point.
I mean, when the PE player has like 2 House of Knives scored out, let alone 3, that would be a dangerous situation. Anytime you, because they just keep them. They're like, here, I have these power counters. If they keep at least 1 on each House of Knife. If you're referring to House of Knives in a singular plural situation, how do you do it?
Well, you would say houses of knives. It's an internal pluralization, like attorneys general. I mean, I'm right.
That's true. Yep.
You're not happy about it, but I am right.
I'm straight up mean sad about it. Just made that word
so,
up.
Yep. More of a portmanteau than a word, but the...
I'm friends with you.
Idiot.
For the friendship or the speaking?
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk about counterplay.
Yeah. The biggest one is to run with a lot of cards in hand. You do not have to stay below 5 cards until the end of the turn. So you could do like 2 clicks to draw or play a diesel, go up to 7-8 cards in hand, and then make your run knowing that you're going to take some damage with more cards than you need. You can also watch the opponent's money. So a lot of the things that deal a lot of net damage or meat damage all in one go during a run cost money. So
it's a theme.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of things do.
Corps need money to fund their bad behaviors and activities.
Particularly Snare and Anansi. Snare is 4 money. That is not cheap, especially because the corp can't always plan it when you're going to access it. Whereas if they're rezzing an Anemone or Anansi, they know they're making that choice and they can say, this is worth it right now. The other thing is when you are running blind into ice, have a killer or AI that can handle whatever sentries you may run into in that faction.
And money to break.
And then card-wise, there are cards that can deal with net damage in particular. Airblades and No One Home are probably the 2 most common anti-net damage ones that I can think of.
Right. So maybe it's worth calling out that net damage is the most common damage type that you'll see in the middle of a run. You will see core damage, but it's much more rare and expensive and hard to pull off.
And very often has a core damage unless the runner does X.
Right. There are some unconditional core damage dealing cards. So like Bloop is an unconditional do one core damage subroutine.
Yes, as a subroutine. So you can actually avoid it with the breakers.
Right.
So there are cards even on that you can play around it. Airblades and No One Home, though, I think are really the only two that we're seeing. And even then, it's mostly like you'll see like a 1X No One Home sometimes. Mostly it's just to bail somebody out and keep them from absolutely dying.
Yeah, some players are playing around with like a one copy of Airblades. Just to see. I mean, it does also deal with the on-encounter effect, which is nice.
Yes. But a lot of ice got printed with when you pass or when this encounter ends effects. So it's a little more niche than I think it was in the last meta.
Right. That's right. So the next group of flatline threat types that you need to be worried about, well, worried is a strong word, I guess, that you need to be aware of are asset-based kill archetypes, I guess is what we're saying. And the threats in that group, we would consider things like Bladderwort, Reaper Function, Clearing House, Urban Renewal, actually is more appropriate in this group of things. It's just like it's a thing that you need to deal with, or it will deal you damage if you don't. It's the opposite of a trap. And that's the fun fork of the trap decks, is that they put out a mix. Usually the good decks will put out a mix of things that you get punished for checking and things that you get punished for not checking. And I think that is neat.
Yeah.
So Nick, you've lately been playing, and you played on stream recently, Diogenes Fujii retrieval deck out of PE.
Yeah, which makes a lot of use of these types of asset-based kills. So these are almost always all things that trigger at the start of or on the corpse turn. So one of the best things that you can do as the runner, if you think you're up against this type of deck, is to end your turn with as many cards in hand as you can, because none of these can outright kill you if your hand is full on their own. Well, Clearinghouse can, but you should see that coming when they advance it beyond five. But Reaper Function's only two, Bladderwort's only one, Clearinghouse is however many advancement counters it has, Urban Renewal is four. So all of these on their own don't do anything if you just have five, or rather they do something, but they don't kill you if you have five cards in hand.
Right. And I guess like an Angelique from hand could be thrown in on top of all this, and any number of other combinations of other things to do one. But like, that's a proactive thing that the corp can do to just give you a damage to throw on the pile.
Right.
Is there any, there's no prerequisite for that, right? It's a threat three.
It's
there
a threat. Yes.
Click, credit, reveal and trash this upgrade from HQ, do a meat damage.
So then the other thing you can do, again, kind of keeping in mind that they're going to need multiples of these to kill you if you're playing correctly in terms of hand size, prevent them from having multiple by keeping the number of assets down. So run face down cards, make sure you know what's out there one way or another, and trash the things that can deal damage to you when you are in a position where you think, okay, they're getting to a critical mass where they could kill me with this. You don't always need to trash, so it can be very tempting to every time you see a Reaper Function or something like that, or a Clearinghouse, get rid of it. But because they're start of turn, you're going to have a little window before they are able to use them, basically your turn that precedes where they are able to use these cards to kill you. So you might be able to say, all right, I'm going to end this turn with five, next turn, you know, you look at it and decide, okay, I need to play a bunch of cards. I need to get rid of that Reaper Function first before I do that, because I'm not going to have time to draw back up.
Something that wasn't something that was in my game plan was just checking things and then sometimes just going, okay, well, this won't kill me and I need to just leave it. Because In these kinds of decks, you can't just go and trash every single card, because that's the whole thing. It's an economic war of attrition. It's so easy for the corp to just go install, install, install. As long as they can draw cards, they can keep doing that. And, you know, that's where like Near Earth Hub makes that. I think Ranji Doge's deck was this out of Nirith Hub. So it's just drawing cards and putting them out there and going, eventually, you are going to run out of gas and miss and not be able to keep up, and then I'm going to take advantage of it. So
exactly.
I think checking things and deciding what's critical and not is a skill that you'll need to develop over trial and error, but that's something that's I should be doing more, I think. And like our, if you watch our games on stream, I'll put a link in the show notes. You can go and watch that stream, by the way, has a bunch of like chapters, so you can go straight to the game. You don't need to watch through 4 hours of anything. I ran and basically trashed everything that I saw when I ran, if I could. And I couldn't, then I tried to make money and go back and, okay, well, I don't want to have to click to run again here, so I'll just trash this now while I'm here. But that's not always the right decision, and I think I need to work on realizing when is right to trash and when is right to leave things, especially in that, when I know the deck is trying to do this game plan to me.
Yes. Yeah, because very often it's doing that and something else. This is very difficult to have as your main win condition. You're also trying to score things, or and we'll kind of get to the different ways you can combo pieces of this with other strategies. But it's something where if you are properly, you know, shepherding your resources, not spending too much to kill all of their stuff and take that win con off the table, you can also address their scoring win con or their tag punishment win con or whatever else they're trying to do to win the game. So one of the other ways that you can do that, even more economically, is to watch what's in servers. And this is something that I think is going to take everybody. I am still terrible at it. But knowing what's in their hand or what they're about to draw off of R&D can help you identify, okay, you know, I know that over the last 3 cards, he's seen, you know, 2 upgrades and an asset that I need to worry about, like a Reaper function. So you can use that knowledge to say, all right, he created 3 new servers, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't actually have 3 assets to put out. So one of those is probably an upgrade that I don't need to worry about right now. It's not going to do anything on its own. You know, there's ways that you can keep down the number of runs you have to make where you are just spending almost an entire turn checking servers to see if it's stuff you need to trash.
Right.
That is like really hard to keep track of. But if it's something that you can do, it can save you a lot of time and energy when you are trying to deal with these asset spam decks if you know already what some of them are likely to be.
Right. Another option generally is just like keeping econ down again for the corp, because those Reaper functions are expensive to res and fire. I think they're 3 apiece.
Yep.
Things just generally cost money, right? So if you find a Marilyn or a Nico campaign, probably get rid of it. Bladder warts, give them money, although it does incentivize them to stay poor. But when it matters, they'll be poor.
Yeah.
Another thing about these decks that's hard to keep up with, and I think good advice generally that I've heard, is to try and make your runs early and then like one run, go trash a thing and then spend the rest of your turn drawing and just kind of be conservative that way. In practice, that does end up being pretty difficult sometimes because the play pattern is install, 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 install. So if you spend 2 clicks running, there's still a third unknown out there somewhere. Then you only have 2 clicks to draw cards back up. So efficient card draw is helpful in these decks. Efficient money is important too. Just good econ and good card draw. But that's every deck that you should be shooting for those things. So
exactly. So then the final category of kill that you're going to see from Flatline is what I'm calling Jinteki Wombo Combo. This is generally out of Jinteki. Other factions could technically do it, but Jinteki is the one that does it the most easily because of PE and their access to a whole bunch of net damage options. But you are going to find a way to do some damage with some of that on board, so those asset-based kills, and then some other way to do damage during your turn. One of the biggest combos is scoring a Fuji asset retrieval, which will deal 3 damage in PE, and then playing Neuro Spike, which deals damage equal to the number of agenda points you've scored. So that does 6 damage right there. That can be a kill. But you can also combo Neuro Spike with lesser agendas. So a Sting or really any agenda. If you've got enough copies of it, if you've got the clicks, you can play multiple Neuro Spikes, or you can get 2 damage off that Reaper function and then get enough from that Sting plus Neuro Spike to kill them. That kind of thing.
It's interesting to me that you say it's Jinteki Wombos, because this, over the course of Netrunner, has, I feel like generally the card that fits this bill and the faction that fits this bill is Wayland with Punitive Counterstrike. And Punitive falls into this combo category as well. So I'd argue it's more than just Jinteki that can pull this off, although Punitive gets pulled into Jinteki sometimes for this reason. Although, again, the econ in Jinteki is fragile, so it's hard for them to have enough to deal with it and do it. But it's possible. And the other way around, too, having Neuro Spikes in Wayland is another thing that you'll see, especially with the agenda that causes meat damage when they steal it. Not Urban
City Art. Works Project.
City Works Project, thank you. And that, you know, you'll see that out of SSO and things like that, where they take meat damage when they steal the City Works, and then a Punitive Counterstrike comes down because it's Wayland and they have money, and then you die.
So, how do you play around that?
Impossible.
Yeah, exactly. You just die. No, the one other thing to mention, Angelique being played from hand, that 1 damage doesn't seem like a lot, but it adds up a lot of different situations where you are one off and now Angelique can get you there. So,
right. And the same can be said for Snare, not in that same proactive use of 1 damage, but just imported into Wayland or any faction really that's trying to kill you is a way to push you over the edge. I guess this is sort of completely unrelated to what you were saying. I'm sorry, but we haven't really highlighted Snare as a key player in this. Just like, oops, made a mistake, ran too late, wasn't thinking about Snare, and then it catches you off guard, and now you're effed.
And by effed, I mean Flatland.
Yeah, I think Snare is, at least in the current meta, sort of like the trap that you are most likely to see. You know, there's Nightmare Archives out there. There are some Urtica Ciphers and things like that. But Snare is really the one that most people are most likely to import if they're going to, because it also gives tags. It's good for NBN, R+, or Tag Storm decks. It's good for dealing damage. It slows the runner down. It makes them slow down and take things a little more deliberately. So it's just a very good card to be aware of. Costs 4 money to trigger. It also triggers off of R&D or from the hand, so it doesn't need to be installed like Urtica Cipher does. Just a very, very powerful card.
Or like Cerebral Overrider does, which has seen even less play, but that's
right.
That's a really nasty one, especially in those decks that are trying to do like the mid-run kills. When your hand gets reduced, it gets even more dangerous. So
then how do you play around it? The biggest, obviously, is end your turn with lots of cards. Same as when you're dealing with asset base, because a lot of these wombos are not going to get you to exactly 6 damage. So if you end your turn with 5, you might be safe from a kill or from a lot of different configurations that might add up to a kill if you were at 4 or 3 cards in hand. Knowing what's in servers. So knowing how much damage they have on the table and then how much they might have in hand can help you plan for how many cards you need to have in hand going into their turn. Watch their money, because all of this costs money, right? Yet Neuro Spike is not cheap. Fuji is a 5-3 agenda. So scoring it, you have to put some investment in or spend a bunch of fast advance or something like that. These are all things that you can watch, and they should all sound familiar because they are things that deal with the prior categories as well.
I think another thing that you might want to have in mind, because you want to be able to steal Fuji at some point to win against Jinteki. It can't be that like this card is the card that thou may not access, right? Otherwise you lose.
Right. That's why they banned Obokata.
Well, it's funny because Obokata wouldn't kill you on the spot if you were unprepared, right? Because
it
you could choose not
prevented
to.
Prevented you from.
Right, but you could choose not to steal it. With Fuji, you can't. So if you want to go steal one of these against one of these Neurospike decks or a Punitive Counter-Strike deck or something, if you want to steal one of these, I think you have to have a proactive plan to draw back up quickly. So having a Nuka on the board or having Diesels in hand, ideally multiple copies, because if net damage takes one of them out, you're pretty sad. So having ways to draw cards back up quickly, or doing it running first click and stealing only on first click and then spending three clicks drawing back up. I think that's the way you survive these things. So
right,
running early, not running late, having money, having card draw.
Yeah, all these are tips against all of them, but it's just interesting to see how they apply to each type. So,
and there's some like bad advice too, like run Caldera. If you're really like struggling against net damage, you could run a Caldera and then you can just pay your way out of it.
Yeah, theoretically. I mean, you could also run stuff like Marrow or Hippocampic Mechanocytes,
right,
which will increase your hand size. So then you can end your turn with eight cards in hand or something like that. Also, maybe kind of in that category is a card like the Class Act, which draws you four cards at the end of your turn when you play it, but it's after the discard phase. So you technically go into the corpse turn floating extra cards.
Yeah, you sort of need to know, like pretend you're a criminal and you want to go steal what you think might be a Fuji. You would have to know, I'm going to steal that this turn and play it. And then
exactly
go run, steal the thing. And then at the end of your turn, you draw back up and you go, ha ha. Or it has to miss the net damage. You know,
right.
That's tricky.
Definitely tricky, but technically possible.
Mm-hmm.
So
on-demand card draw is another option, like specifically Stoneship Chart Room. There's a cool combination with Lilypad and Gachapon that Andre pointed out to me, actually, based on watching our stream that we played. I had a Gachapon. I think I had a Gachapon, or I at least had a Lilypad down, or maybe I said I didn't want to play the Lilypad because I was afraid about the money. But if you're playing an Arasana deck with a Gachapon in it, you can just install the Gachapon as effectively life insurance. That's not how life insurance works in the real world. It doesn't stop you from dying.
Huh.
But in this case...
Wait. What have I been paying for?
Immortality. you can start of the corp turn. They start to go off. They hit you with damage. So say a bladderwort goes off. You can say, okay, hold on a second. I'm going to, before you, you know, punitive counterstrike or neurospike me, I'm going to fire my Gachapon. And oh, look, I found a program. Install it. Draw a card off of the Lilypad. And I'm safe from death. So,
and that's the big thing about the on-demand is, and there's not a ton of this, things that can draw you cards during the corpse turn. So that's why Stoneship is a big one, because it's just a trash. It's not a click. It's not something that has to be played from hand or anything.
Right. Not seeing a lot of play either, because I think this is kind of a key thing here, is that once you get good enough, and I don't know that we are, but you know, it is possible to get good enough at this game that you don't need these crutches. And that's why they don't end
right
up in the top tier decks.
Right. And the vast majority of ways that we've mentioned to deal with damage and avoid flatlines are not run this specific card. They are ways to structure your turns, ways to structure your game plan that will give you the ability to deal with the various types of threat without having to put cards that are only good into that type of matchup in your deck.
Yeah. Generally not worth putting silver bullets in for.
Exactly. So the one other thing to keep in mind is that not every corp deck can flatline you. Again, these are all good tips to have generally. Not running yourself broke, having a decent hand at the end of your turn so that you have options the next turn, having money, knowing what the corp has down as far as assets, what they're drawing. All these are good things to do in any deck, but they are most obviously good here in the specific matchup where you're worried about getting flatlined. So identifying where you can choose portions of that to ignore when it makes sense is really important to, you know, if you're running against a deck that you know isn't running any damage cards, you can ignore a lot of this. But watch out, because a lot will run one or two just to keep you honest. So that Tagstorm NBN deck might have a bunch of psychographics and shipments from Vladi Sibirsk and that kind of stuff. but it could run one or two end of the line just to kill you in case you get sloppy.
Yeah, Corp's got to keep runners in line, you know?
Exactly.
Well, that's a wrap for episode 12 of Neon Static. We've been your hosts, Eric.
And I've been Nick.
If you want to get in touch with us about anything we've said during this podcast, we can be reached by email at neonstaticpod@gmail.com. We're also neonstaticpod on Instagram and Mastodon. We're no longer on Twitter. Our handles on Discord are Canister, Gullbrander, and Triforce Legend. A link to the New Hampshire Netrunners Discord will be in the show notes, where you can always find us. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@neonstaticpod, to catch videos and live streams we create. And if you enjoy our content, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/neonstatic. Links to everything are in the show notes.
Thanks for listening.
And remember, always run with your eyes closed, because what you can't see can't hurt you. Nicholas, are you recording?
I am now. I kind of forgot that that was also a thing I had to do.
I'm happy that I checked. Dear Lord, I'm happy I checked. Oh, I just had a weird nose hair thing. It hurt. Listen, this is real life. Okay.
You might not look like it, but this is what it looks like.
Peak performance.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you say you might not look like it? I love that. Thanks. Three keelings, and the main win condition is strangle the runner until they asphyxiate. How do you say that word?
Asphyxiate.
I dare you. Say it.
Asphyxiate.
Ass fix.
Yeah, it's an ass fix.
That's why I can never do it right.
Ass fix that he ate. Asphyxiate. anyway,
Hold on. We gotta like roll that back a little bit.
Okay.
Right. And the main win con is for Keeling to strangle an asphyxiate. Wow. I just found my thing that was your thing last time. Asphyxiate. Shit. I don't want to do editing.